Translation of Vidura also inquired, how is it that the great sages who were completely conversant with religious principles desired to curse King Vena, who himself carried the rod of punishment and thus awarded him the greatest punishment? For a part, it is understood that the king is able to give punishment to everyone, but in this case it appears that the great sages punished him. The king must have done something very serious, otherwise. How could the great sages, who were supposed to be the greatest and most tolerant, still punish him? In spite of their elevated religious consciousness, it appears also that the king was not independent of the Brahminical culture. Above, the king was the control of the Brahmanas, and if needed, the Brahmanas would have thrown the king or kill him, not with any weapon, but with the mantra of a Brahma Sapa. The Brahmanas were so powerful that simply by their cursing, one would immediately die. It is the duty of all citizens in the state never to insult the king, even though he sometimes appears to have done something very simple. Because of his prowess, the king is always more influential than all other ruling chiefs. Therefore, according to Vedic civilization, the king is supposed to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of God, who is called Nara Narayan. Any king of the Narayan, the Supreme Personality of God, it appears in human society as the king. It is etiquette that neither a Brahman nor a Kshatriya king is ever insulted by the citizens, even though a king appears to be sinful, the citizens not insult him. But in the case of Vena, it appears he was cursed by the Naradevatas. Therefore, it is concluded that sinful activities are very grievous. Vidura requested Maitreya, my dear Brahmana, you are well conversant with all subjects, both past and future. Therefore, I wish to hear from you all the activities of King Vena. I am your faithful devotee, so please explain this. Prabhupada Vidura accepted Maitreya as spiritual master. The disciple always inquires from the spiritual master, and the spiritual master answers the question, provided the disciple is very gentle and devoted. The Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that by the mercy of the spiritual master, one is blessed with the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master is not inclined to disclose all the secrets of transcendental science, unless the disciple is very submissive and devoted. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the process of receiving knowledge from the spiritual master entails submission, inquiry, and service. Sri Maitreya replied, my dear Vidura, once the great King Hanga arranged to perform the great sacrifice known as Ashwamedha, all the expert brahmanas present knew how to invite the demigods, but in spite of their efforts, no demigods participated or appeared in the sacrifice. Purport of Vedic sacrifice is not an ordinary performance. The Devatas used to participate in such sacrifices, and the animal sacrifices and such performances were reincarnated with new life. In this age of Kali, there are no powerful Brahmanas who can invite demigods or give renewed life to animals. Formerly, the Brahmanas welcomed conversant and Vedic Mahajas who showed the potency of the Mahajas, but in this age, because there are no such Brahmanas, all such sacrifices are forbidden. The sacrifice in which horses are offered is called Ashwamedha. Sometimes cows are sacrificed, not for eating purpose, but to give them new life, in order to show the potency of the mantra. In this age, therefore, the only practical yoga is sankirtan yoga, or chanting the Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day. The priests engaged in the sacrifice and informed King Anga, O King, we are properly offering clarified butter in the sacrifice, but despite all our efforts, the demigods do not accept it. O King, we know that paraphernalia to perform the sacrifice is well collected by you with great faith and care, and is not polluted. Our chanting of the Vedic hymns is not deficient in any way, for all the Brahmins and priests present here are expert and are executing the performances properly. Purport is to practice the Brahmanas conversant with the science to pronounce the Vedic mantra in the right accent. The combination of the mantra and the Sanskrit words is to be chanted with the right pronunciation, otherwise it will not be successful. In this age, the Brahmanas are neither well versed in Sanskrit language nor very pure in practical life. But by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we're going to get the highest benefit of sacramental performances. Even if the Hare Krishna mantra is not chanted properly, it still has so much potency that the chanter gains the effect. Dear King, we do not find any reason that the demigods should feel insulted or neglected in any way. But still, the demigods, who are witnesses for the sacrifice, do not accept their share. We do not know why this is so. Purport is indicated here that if there is negligence on the part of the priest, the demigods do not accept their share in sacrifices. Similarly, in devotional service, there are offenses known as seva or rag. Those who are engaged in worshipping the deity Radha and Krishna in the temple should avoid such offenses in service. The offenses in service are described in nectar devotion. If we seem to make a show of offering service to the deity but do not care for the seva for Radha, certainly Radha Krishna deity will not accept offerings from such non-devotees. Devotees engaged in temple worship should not therefore manufacture their own methods but should strictly follow the regulated principles of cleanliness, and then offerings will be accepted. Maitreya explained that King Anga, after reading the statements of the priest, was greatly aggrieved. At that time, he took permission from the priest to break the silence and inquired from all the priests who were present in the sacrificial arena. King Anga addressed the priest with the order, "My dear priest, kindly tell me what offense I have committed. Although invited, the demigods are neither taking part in the sacrifice nor accepting their shares." The head priest said, "O king, in this life you do not find any sinful activity even within your mind, so you are not in the least offensive. But we can see that in your previous life you performed sinful activities, due to which, in spite of your having all qualifications, you have no son. Therefore, the purpose of marrying is to beget a son, because a son is necessary to deliver his father and forefathers from any hellish condition in life, which they may be. Chanakya Pandit therefore says, Putra Hinam Griham Sunyam, without a son, married life is simply abominable. King Anga was a very pious king in this life, but because of his previous sinful activities, he could not get a son. It is concluded, therefore, that if a person does not get a son, it is due to his past sinful life. O king, we wish all good fortune for you. You have no son, but if you pray at once to the Supreme Lord and ask for a son, and if you escape the sacrifice for that purpose, the enjoyer of sacrifice, the Supreme Personality of God, will fulfill your desire." Vidura inquired, "How is it that the great sages who were completely conversant with religious principles desired to curse King Vena, who himself carried the rod of punishment and thus awarded him the greatest punishment?" So, it was mentioned that the king was, King Vena was actually not a very good son. And he also was cursed. So how is it possible that he got cursed by the Brahmanas, since he's the king? So the story is now told of how Vena was born to King Anga, and then the conduct of Vena, and then his curse, etc., and then the appearance of Prithu. So this is almost an introductory description. So the by the rules of Dharma, the king is the protector of the people, and he has a special position, therefore he has to be honored, and he has the right to punish. So normally others cannot punish him. Yet we see that the Brahmins in this case did carry out punishment. Therefore, it must have been a very severe case. The Brahmanas in ordinary cases would not carry out punishment. That's the duty of the king. And why punish the king? He is the one that gives punishment. So there must have been some very good reason for doing so. So that is why Vidura asks the question. So under normal cases, of course, the king has is greatly respected, and he gives punishment to others where necessary according to the rules of justice. But here we see the reverse takes place. The king king becomes the object of punishment. So, to relate that story, how this happened, then Maitreya begins to tell about King Anga. So Anga was carrying out sacrifices. We see that a lot of these kings in the Bhagavatam are doing sacrifices, even Ambarish did sacrifices. Though, in the present day, we know that such sacrifices are not recommended. So, obviously we see it was not a Kali Yuga, and moreover, it was in Swayambhuva Manvantara, the first Manvantara long ago. So, under these conditions, the kings would do great sacrifices, or homa, and specifically mentions they did horse sacrifices. So there are various types of sacrifices, and one of them is the horse sacrifice. This is a very elaborate sacrifice that generally kings only can do. So it requires a lot of brahmins, a lot of wealth, a lot of arrangements. So this is something that a king would do, that is Hastamena sacrifice, sacrifice of a horse. So he did the sacrifices, but the Devata does not appear. in spite of the fact that Anga was a great king and the Brahmanas were also expert. So then the Brahmanas give the reason, and that is that the king has no son. So there is a fault there. That means that if the king has no son in his previous life, he must have done some sinful activity. Because generally you'll have a son, it's considered a good fortune. So if you don't have that good fortune, it means you must have done some impiety or sinful activity in a previous lifetime, therefore you have no son. Yeah? So therefore, some remedial measure has to be taken to remove that sin and then get a son for the king. So we see in this case, of course, he got a son, but it was a pretty bad son. So it's not even worthy to be a son. So this is the Vedic tradition, one should have a son. Now the reason, of course, practically, of course, we must have sons in order to carry on a lineage in the family, if the society works on a patriarchal basis. On the other hand, of course, the idea of having a son is so that the son can do the funeral rites, because generally a son is necessary to do the shraddha rites for the parents, and if he doesn't do them, then it would be a problem for the departed parents, because they wouldn't have a son to do those rites. So that's another reason. So therefore the scriptures always imply that you must have a son, and therefore not to have a son is like a sin. So this is the normal view in society, that one must have a son. Unfortunately, that is not always good, because if the son is useless, then he's worse than having no son at all. And that was the case of King Vena. He was so bad that the Brahmins had to curse him to die. So, generally the son is supposed to deliver the parents from hell. But if one has a bad son, he can drag everyone to hell with him. So this is a big problem. So though the injunction is there in the Vedas to have a son, it is not always an absolute rule, because if the son, it turns out bad for some reason or other, then it is not worth having such a son. So the general prescription is there in society for such things, but it's not an absolute rule, because we'll see that the opposite happens, and we'll see that is the case here, that King Vena then wanted a son, because the Brahmins said you must have a son, so he got a son, but then it turned out to be worse than having no son. So he ended up with more of a problem than he, and then described previously that he left the kingdom in disgust because he had such a bad son. And then the problem is that that son caused problem in the kingdom, because he was not a responsible king. And because of that, then the Brahmins had to curse him.
So it produced a big problem, because he had this son, that produced a big problem in society, bigger than not having a son at all. And so the rules are there. We see that the rules are not foolproof, in other words, that they simply having a son is not auspicious, because if he's a bad son, then he can create a lot of problems for the family and for the whole society. But therefore, these injunctions have to be taken not so literally at all times. So, as I said, the normal procedure was for the kings to do these sacrifices. And as we know, of course, in Kali Yuga, the sacrifices are not recommended. That's a tricky activity. But we see that many of these kings in ancient times, they did these sacrifices as they were interviewers. And they did them with great elaboration. And the devatas would appear. They would call the devatas, and the devatas would come to accept their share of the sacrifices. So that implies that the Brahmins were quite qualified at that particular time. So this is one method of worship. Yajna itself means worship, and we see in Bhagavad Gita also, this is part of karma, karma yoga, to do the sacrifices, please the devatas. So the kings carried out this process as part of their dharma for prosperity of the kingdom, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that one has to carry out sacrifice to get rain, and rain brings food, etc. So the king is responsible, so he wants to please the devatas, so the devatas please everybody. So for that purpose, he does these types of sacrifices. Of course, the other reason is that he has to set a good example and follow the process of dharma for the rest of the people. But we also know that from the devotional viewpoint, that one does not have to depend on devatas at all. One can simply worship the Supreme Lord by any method. It could be sacrifice, it could be deity worship, it could be chanting the name of the Lord, Nam Sankirtan. Any of those methods is direct worship of the Lord. So though this is a method also, it's a little bit indirect, because it does involve worship of devatas. So the direct method is simply worship the Supreme Lord. And the conclusion of Bhagavatam is that if we worship the Lord, all the devatas are satisfied. Like the roots of the, if we water the root of the tree, the leaves are satisfied. If we put food in the stomach, limbs of the body are satisfied. If we worship the Supreme Lord, devatas are satisfied. That means we don't have to worship the devatas. All we have to do is worship Vishnu or Krishna. Okay. So that is the conclusion of Bhagavatam. So in spite of these different sacrifices which involve devata worship, we should not be bewildered by this. Rather, we should understand that the simpler process is simply worship the Supreme Lord. Now, why they would do this at all? It's because this is part of the scriptural injunction as part of karma and dharma. So the kings are following that system. They're implementing dharma and following the process, setting good example for everyone else. They do all these different activities. As we see, the kings, many of them were great devotees of the Lord, so they also understood this is all secondary ultimately, and worship of Supreme Lord is much higher than this. So we see that in the case of Dhruva. At a certain point, he rejected the whole thing, and then he went to the Dhruva Loka, where he worshipped the Lord directly. So we should not be bewildered by these descriptions and think that they were all involved in Maya all the time. This is part of their duty as a king to carry out these performances. If the Vaishnava carries out the sacrifice and worships the devatas, there is no offense if he does it with the proper understanding. If he does it with the wrong understanding, then it becomes aparadha. So if he does it out of duty alone, understanding that actually it is only necessary to worship the Lord, but we do this out of duty, then there's no offense in it. But if we think, I must do this, and I must worship the devatas, because it's sin if I don't, then that becomes aparadha. So we have one of the aparadhas is to think that the Supreme Lord is just like the devatas on an equal level. And to think that chanting the holy name is just like a sacrifice equal. Bhakti is equal to other activities of karma yoga. So that becomes offensive. So if a devotee king institutes his sacrifices, he must always understand that this is actually not so necessary, but we do this to set example for others only, out of duty to follow the rules of Dharma. But ultimately, we simply worship the Supreme Lord. That is sufficient for everything. So that is the proper understanding of a Vaishnava king. So it is recommended by Jiva Goswami that if we do these yajñas, with of course Vishnu and not Deva is involved, still Nam Sankirtan is the main element. So we do these things, but actually Nam Sankirtan is the main element, not these things. And they're all secondary. Well, secondary activity. It's like we also do deity worship. It's also not the Yuga Dharma. We do it. But it's secondary too, Nam Sankirtan. Having bad children? Well, there's different reasons. One, of course, is because of the parents and their activities. Then we get bad son. The other is upbringing and training. Another is association of that child with others. If he associates with the wrong people, then he can be influenced. For instance, we find Ajamil was a Brahmin, etc., but he got influenced by seeing this Sudra woman, like that. So various reasons one can deviate. There's different reasons. One, of course, is parents. One is the child himself, his character, due to some karmas or whatever, the parents. The other is the upbringing and the association. So there's many factors involved. Well, it could be part of it due to past karma and part of its present activities. We can't attribute everything to karma. It's also the activities we do in this lifetime, which also make a situation worse or better. So we could have bad karma, but if we act properly in this lifetime, we can minimize that karma also. But if we do more simple activities in this lifetime, then it gets worse.
So the family becomes enemy to others. We consider it becomes an enemy.
Well, of course, anyone in the family that turns out bad, it becomes a problem for the family, and the whole family itself becomes a problem for society. Because that person is unproductive as far as society is concerned, and maybe the opposite. End up in jail or get punished or whatever. So it's not beneficial for society at all.
Thank you very much.